sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how.
Before we begin officially, are there any topics? How exactly do we want to present this? Is it a trumpeting of our triumph as the superior book series after playing the long game? Do we want to talk about specific things about each one? I did no research. I did very little preparation.
I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I just think it would be good to, you know, to acknowledge that Harry Potter was, like, formative also. You know, we had a big Harry Potter phase with the books and the movies. And, you know, so at this point, most Harry Potter adults of that age are having to do some kind of reckoning with what J.K. Rowling has shown herself to be, as opposed to what Kay Applegate has shown herself to be, which is someone who has continued to write good children's literature and not shitty adult literature. And also has, you know, loved and supported her transgender daughter and trans kids and generally been a role model, unlike some other people. So, you know.
Okay, so we'll dig into that. I think we don't need to record an opening now. Maybe that was just it.
Well, I mean, the contrast is just so stark, because, I mean, obviously it's a big, it's kind of like a cliche thing now to be like, I'm old enough to remember XYZ, and usually XYZ happened, like, a week ago, or, you know, last year, but in this case, it's like, yeah, I am old enough that I have lived a certain amount of life, and have a lot of shared experiences, and, like, touchstones, and once you are an adult, of whatever age, you know, 20, you know, college, post-college, like, at some point you do, you know, somebody is going to prove themselves to suck really badly who's, like, important to you. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that? Like, that might be the grown-up thing that pretty much everybody experiences, either in a personal way where, like, you, like that Community episode where Troy meets LeVar Burton and for some reason LeVar Burton is, like, awful to him, which...
Oh, yeah.
Would never happen.
I
can never meet LeVar Burton, right?
I don't even know if he's awful to him. I think the joke is that he's just kind of, like, normal or neutral, but Troy still has a meltdown because, like, there's no way that he could, like, ever, like, embrace that reality of, like, being able to, like... maybe live up to his own expectations of how he wanted to be with LeVar Burton. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've seen Community.
I've actually never seen that episode. I probably shouldn't have referenced it.
That's okay. I do things like that all the time. That doesn't matter. I'm going to free pass.
Somebody meeting their hero and their hero, like, you know, being indifferent to them. And then you have to be like, okay, you know, let's adjust. They are just people. Everyone is just a person. Or, you know, I mean, obviously I've never met J.K. Rowling. And she has not, like, harmed me personally, but her effect is felt, you know, if you have any kind of conscience.
Well, and I think as well, the, not to immediately leap to the argument of, like, social media has changed everything, but, I mean, social media means that you meet your heroes every day on a horrible place called the internet.
Yeah, the parasocial relationship is definitely a warping effect. And I mean, this week and last week in particular, if you like science fiction or comics or gaming, like, you're probably having a week, even more so than usual, perhaps, because it's just been this unending reel of men being outed as being, you know, some variant on sex pest, either, like, really, really gross and horrible, or just, like, you know, a harasser, like a known harasser, or someone who apologizes and, like, covers up for harassers. Just, you know, names that you've heard of. Warren Ellis comics were at one point important to me, so, like, that was the one that I got to sit with and be like, huh, okay, cool, like, why didn't I clock this, you know, why didn't I see it in his writing? Like, if we read Harry Potter now, like, would we see this in her writing? Probably.
Yeah.
Because we're grown-ups and have a little bit more critical faculty than 11-year-olds.
Yeah, I haven't reread them as an adult, I don't think.
Me neither. And it's funny because, like, as all this is going on, like, literally the week that she kept opening her mouth and opening her mouth, even people, you know, were telling her to stop, but, like, at least quit, like, digging, down, 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 and she just didn't. A lot of public libraries are doing, like, a Harry Potter reread with Overdrive, which is the ebook platform, and Overdrive specifically made, like, the ebooks simultaneously available so that lots of people could access them and, like, read together, which, in theory, is a good thing, and I can see why libraries went, you know, for Harry Potter during, like, a stressful time when we all just, you know, we want to read together and, like, have some kind of a comfort read, and Harry Potter's that for lots of people. But it's like, okay, this could have been an opportunity to promote a new series, a new author. Like, I can think of lots of authors that would benefit from having their ebooks made available simultaneously to library users, because that's usually not the case. Usually you have to wait, just like you would with a physical book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's just not that hard to find another fantasy series that the whole family can enjoy.
Yeah.
So it was very jarring to see, like, oh, my public library here is promoting this at the same time that JK is writing her own epitaph.
Mm-hmm.
And to date, even though I kind of tried to bully them into it in public, I don't think they've, like, responded in any way. I haven't really seen any response from libraries, like, overall, as to, like, what we're going to do about Harry Potter now. Like, obviously you can't remove them from the shelves, but, like, how do you offset that?
Yeah, that's, and I think, like, a lot of the discussion surrounding this has touched on, you know, death of the author, and how much does the work belong to the creator versus the, you know, the person that interpreted it. You know, it's any kind of communication. It comes from a source, and it lands on, you know, it's input on someone's ears, and they can do with it what they please. And, you know, I'm usually a big fan of death of the author because, you know, because they don't get to have all the power. Like, I subscribe very much to the idea that, like, you know, whatever meaning that you make is the most important meaning, because it's the meaning that you make. Whether it's art on, you know, a canvas, or, you know, music or painting or literature or what have you. But you can't divorce somebody's creative work from their context, and that's half of, like, what critical theory is, and critical theory, or, like, if you take an art history class, like, that's half of the framework that you use to look at the paintings is, you know, where was this person from? What period did they live in? Why did they choose this subject matter? Why did they choose to portray this subject matter in a particular way? And I feel like we apply those critical thinking skills to works of art that are, like, well in the past, like maybe when the author literally is dead, because this is the only way that we can know them is through their work. But I don't know, like, in the present, you know, how, you know, do we take those questions as seriously of, like, what is the context of this person who wrote this thing? Or are they just a celebrity in our current pop culture, you know, pantheon, that we try to remove them from, maybe because it's like we think it's our same context? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Thomas Hardy's dead, he can't defend himself. J.K. Rowling is alive and can at least try to defend herself from her shitty opinions and from being called out on them. And, I mean, part of it is definitely, like, I think the joke is, oh, you know, Stephanie Meyer wrote a famously problematic series, but she's not on social media, and so she's at this point more well regarded, I would say, because all we have is her text. And, like, I mean, as someone who was raised in the same church as Stephanie Meyer, like, I find a lot wrong in that text that I know where it comes from.
Mm.
And plenty of people smarter than me and more familiar with specifically with like Native American issues than me, have delineated lots of problems with Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're inclined to give it, by this point it has almost like kind of like a fuzzy kind of vintage glow around it, because Stephanie Meyer has never been on Twitter opening her mouth.
Yeah.
And so there's some kind of, there's still some sort of buffer there where you can be like, okay, I mean, yeah, it's garbage, but you can see the garbage. And since we don't know the author, or we don't feel like we know the author, because she's not in our face, she's not like interacting with fans in real time, there's more benefit of a doubt of like, well, you know, maybe she's learned something, or maybe she's, you know, not as actively shitty as her book suggests. Whereas J.K. has left us no doubt at this point.
She really just airtight locked that right up. She took efforts.
And, like, I mean, obviously we, you know, we're almost exactly the right age to grow up with Harry, right?
Mm.
And so we read all the books as they came out and saw the movies as they came out. And that's, like, a long span of time. We saw the last film in, like, I mean, I think it was in grad school.
Yeah.
Like, that's a long-ass time to be involved in the series. And we weren't even, like, super involved in it, I would say.
Not, probably not in the grand scheme of involvement, yes.
So, like, at least, you know, I feel like I don't have to necessarily interrogate, like, which parts of me came from those books in a way that I, you know, have had to do with other books.
Mm-hmm.
That are more, like, formative, I guess, and have in some ways been visited by the Sock Fairy since I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, I feel for other people our age who were more intensely, like, affected by it and who did, like, see themselves in the characters or felt that they had learned specific lessons from the books. But in a way that, if you were a fan of emo at the same time, you now as an adult get to reckon with the fact that a big chunk of those men are not good men,
mm-hmm.
and were not good men at the time, and were, you know, actively preying on girls your age at that time. I do think there's some power in not, like, discarding the thing that you love. And it's, you know, at some point, like, it becomes, the parts of it that are yours, you know, they get to stay yours. I don't think there's any reason to necessarily discard things. You know, you can never, like, you know, we can't only take in pure media, right?
Yeah.
Like, I love tons of garbage films. I love tons of movies that were made for men, by men, about men, and are just awful in a lot of ways. But, you know, you can at least take it in critically, right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's so much. I mean, growing up as, like, a middle-class white person, white woman in the United States in the time that we did, there are so many movies that I loved as a teenager that my love for them will always have to have an asterisk next to it. Like, and, you know, I can hyperbolically say, like, emotionally to me, this is a perfect film. Like, emotionally. But it's usually because it's made for me, and it's full of white women, and it doesn't have, like, any awareness of, like, anyone other than white women in it. And, like, that, like, you know, that's something that it's like, well, let me sit down and think about that and, like, recognize that this will always have an asterisk next to it. And that I was the that key in The Mummy that, like, fits the lock perfectly, or the, like, round peg in the round hole. Like, I was the target audience for that, and it meant a lot to me, but I am not the all-consuming audience. Like, there are so many audiences that, you know, are not even, like, peripherally present in those works. And I think you said earlier about the library choosing Harry Potter because of it being, like, a comfort read. I think that's another thing that, like, comes into play with this issue, is that the things that we love when we're growing up make us feel good, and we don't necessarily have the critical thinking skills when we're younger to understand, like, problems. present in the, even in the text at the time, regardless of the author. And then as you grow older and smarter, and especially in times like now where you want to return to what feels like happier times, even though it doesn't really, like, we grew up during the Bush administration, like, was it really a better time? Like, I mean, like, let's not, like, get into it. But it's not like we grew up in, like, a utopia, like, halcyon days. I mean, you were a kid. That's what it ultimately comes down to.
Yeah, I think, you know, the core truth of childhood, like, for better or worse, is that everything feels normal. Like, whatever your life is like, you kind of just think that that's the standard, even
yeah.
if it's very bad
yeah.
in some way. And like the flip side of that, as far as media goes, is that for all the hand wringing that gets done by adults about like what children watch and read, like here's a fun example. Mercedes Lackey. I don't think you ever really got into her because
nope.
you weren't really a fantasy person outside of Harry Potter.
Nope, I need some context and information, please.
Mercedes Lackey wrote a ton of what we would call, like, fantasy romance, which is a great genre that needs to come back for lots of reasons. And so it's, like, you know, high fantasy, but with, like, lots of female characters and lots of wish fulfillment and, like, lots of pretty horses. So, yeah, you can see why I would like that. And she also wrote this really sexed up fairy tale series called The Elemental Masters. And I actually don't remember if the book that I'm thinking of was part of this, but regardless, it was a fairy tale retelling of Swan Lake. And it's called The Black Swan. And I must have read this book probably 4 times in high school, probably, just because it was in the fantasy section. They have these gorgeous, like, lush covers, you know, just super appealing if you are a girl who likes fantasy. And I hadn't thought about this book in years, and it popped up on a list recently of a fairly famous sex worker's, like, favorite books about sex. And I was like, yeah, gosh, there is a lot of sex in that book that when I was a kid, like, it just wasn't registering. Like, that wasn't why I was reading it.
Mm.
You recall what I was like as a teenager?
I do.
That's not why I was reading it.
I'll say, I was also not reading
it. It was like a juicy, interesting fairy tale book, and I liked fairy tales, and it had a pretty cover, and, like, weird magic and stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, like, in hindsight, it's full of sex. And,
mm.
you know, just stuff like that. Like, most children are not being warped by, you know, every generation has something, you know, like Satanic Panic or heavy metal music, video games,
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, when we were, yeah, people thought that it was going to make all of us, like, start practicing witchcraft. Even my mom had a problem with it. Like, she didn't stop me from reading them, but I think she wanted to. And I guess in hindsight, she was right, but
not for the reason
she got.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think the moral of that story is that whatever is present in Harry Potter that does reflect, like, those parts of J.K., I think that it would be more obvious now, especially, I mean, if you are a writer or if you're interested in genre tropes or ways in which genre fiction can, like, expand, then, yeah, it's really obvious, like, certain elements of, like, you know, J.K. could have done these things and she didn't.
Yeah.
You know, she could have gone in this direction and made the world bigger and she didn't. And maybe that is overt because of her beliefs, and it probably isn't. But those, you know, any kind of, the author's beliefs always come through in the fiction in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only thing we can do as adults is recognize that and decide, you know, to what extent we need to keep it in our lives.
I think so much of fantasy and science fiction, especially the stuff that gets really popular, and I don't know if we have George Lucas to blame for this, or if we should just go all the way back to Joseph Campbell, or we should go, like, all the way back to, like, all the stories that come into The Hero with a Thousand Faces. I don't know, like, if it's just, like, civilization, just, like, men and civilization. Like, I don't know. But there's a template, and you can do interesting things with the template. You can subvert the template, or like retelling fairy tales. Like, that's a fantastic way, and that's a really fantastic way to introduce, like, people who are not usually represented in those archetypical fairy tales. Like, that's a really great way to subvert tropes and introduce people of color or queer people or, like, anyone who's not cis, white, like, straight, you know, check your boxes, put it in a really superficial way. But it's just, I don't know, the template that J.K. Rowling used... it's just kind of the template. Yeah, it didn't really... I don't know. The more I think about Harry Potter, the more I wonder or really sort of question if she really... Like, what diversions are there from the template?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have... It's a hero arc, and... Yeah, because, I mean, I guess it's usually the case of... Most people will not claim the protagonist as their favorite character.
Mm.
Like, most people's favorite character isn't Harry. And so Harry is not what's drawing you in. It's usually, I mean, you know, it's like the world or the idea that, you know, you could be a wizard secretly. I think that was probably it for most kids. Like,
yeah.
You know, when's your letter going to arrive? And that's why that's such a thing, like
yeah.
The Hogwarts letter.
Yeah, or the Hogwarts house and robes
and wands.
Into
it. Yeah. but yeah, I mean, if you know, there's not too much there that's specifically original, and if you are a scholar of British fantasy, which I'm not, you know, I'm sure plenty of papers have been written about, like, where JK's ideas came from,
mm-hmm.
and what she was ripping on, and what she chose to preserve, instead of change. To her particular points about trans people, like, there's so much transformation in those books.
Mm.
And of course there's also, I mean, Animorphs is entirely about transformation,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's on the cover.
And so, like, I mean, you know, certainly I think it's an overly generous reading to look at Animorphs and say, you know, here are the ways in which it's more progressive and more intentionally progressive than Harry Potter.
Because
yeah. They're not the same series. They were slight contemporaries, but they weren't really aimed at the same audiences, other than, like, the broad umbrella of, like, kid literature. Obviously, Harry Potter's much longer.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, I recall hearing from one or two authors that the length of Harry Potter was really the thing about it. In terms of publishing, because it proved that kids would read longer books, and so other authors got to write longer books.
Huh.
So thanks for that, I guess.
Yeah.
I benefited in some ways. There were a few authors I liked who then got to write, like, big, chunky duologies instead of, like, shorter trilogies.
Mm.
Who
well,
knows?
That's, like, another thing as well. Like, J.K. Rowling using a template, but then also becoming the template. Like... that, you know, publishers are seeking the next Harry Potter, or were seeking the next Harry Potter, and I don't know if then the baton got passed to the Hunger Games, or... Which, at least the Hunger Games portrays a revolution more, like,
expressly. Rick Riordan is probably the direct inheritor.
Okay.
And he's also a really good example of somebody who did the exact opposite of what J.K. has done.
Oh.
Which is, he got... super fucking popular off of Percy Jackson and wrote a couple of other series about mythology and stuff. And then he developed an imprint and called Rick Riordan Presents, and it's all authors of color writing about mythologies from their cultures. And it's amazing. And
damn,
that
would
have been my pick if anybody at the library had asked me, but nobody did.
Damn, Rick. Who knew? I didn't know. A lot of people
yeah.
knew. I didn't know. I never read Percy Jackson. He's a lightning thief. There is a lightning thief. That's all I got.
Yeah, lightning thief is the first one. I've actually only read one of them, which is kind of sacrilege in my line of work. But by the time they came out, like, I was too old for it. I wasn't the target audience anymore. Even though I love mythology, like, you know, I liked it. It was great.
Mm.
I'm glad that kids still, it's very popular. Like, they move a lot.
Nice.
And, yeah, he took all of his money and all of his clout, and he did the right thing.
God bless.
Thanks, Mick.
Yeah. That's what you're supposed to do when you get success.
Yeah, that is.
Pass it on.
And, like, yeah, Applegate has done that, too. I mean, it's kind of funny that she's Catherine Applegate now. Obviously, that's her name.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's more known by, like, by the patrons that I work with. Very occasionally, somebody... One time a dad came in and they were looking for, I think, Wishtree. And at some point when I was finding Wishtree for them, he was like, is this the weird animal book lady? And I was like, yes, it is, sir. You are indeed thinking of the same Catherine A. Applegate. Because he would, you know, he was about my age.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no, a dad.
It's funny to think about, like, every now and then, there's still a lot of, like, heavy hitters in kids' literature from when we were kids that are still alive and still publishing. And I'm like, God, when K.A. dies, when, like, Avi dies.
Oh, my God, Avi.
There are some author deaths that are really going to fuck me up, like, in the next probably 10 to 15 years.
Oh, no. We've still got Beverly Cleary, but for how much longer?
Exactly. And, like, Gordon Corman is still kicking and still publishing and... So it's like, there's a great joy in that, and being able to give books by authors that I loved when I was a kid to kids now, and know that they love them.
Yeah.
And also that those authors, specifically those three, aren't pieces of shit.
Yay! I will say, the one, I feel like the one template, like... The thing of, like, the chosen one, of the hero who's intertwined with the villain, who's, like, not actually an ordinary person, but, like, in some sort of way has been identified as, like, a chosen one who has to, like, defeat, like, a great evil through, like, magic or whatever. I would say, like, to me, the best telling of that template, which admittedly I am not... I don't watch all the things or read all the things. I'm not a ravenous consumer of things. I'm a very slow consumer of things. But Steven Universe, honestly, was the one that, like, when I finished it, I was like, that was basically the template. Now, mind you, I haven't seen the movie or the future. But when I got to the end of the original run, I was like, that was basically the template, but it did it really well and had so many other things in it. That made it, like, so worthwhile watching, so yeah, so that would be my recommendation if anyone wants to see the template. I mean, probably anybody listening has already watched Steven Universe.
I do feel like there's some overlap there.
Yeah.
It is interesting to think, I honestly have never really thought about Harry Potter and Animorphs in direct conjunction, even though they are two of the three big series of my formative years, with the third being Tamara Pierce books. But once JK started going off and people were like, you know, Twitter started joking about how, like, you know, K.A. has never done this, like, this was the superior series all along, then I started thinking about the two as an actual series, like, because, you know, they have a beginning and end. We know how they begin and how they end, and we know what the themes are. And they are actually, like, pretty similar.
Mm.
It's about kids fighting a war.
Mm.
And they just happen to have very different themes and end games, I guess. Because, like, you know, now it's kind of a joke, like, oh, Harry Potter becomes a cop. Right?
Yes.
He becomes an Auror.
Yes.
And then what happens to our kids? Well, some of them die.
Oh, no!
And the rest have, you
PTSD.
Know, some of them have this war guilt that they deal with in various self-destructive ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's honestly, like, I think it's summed up in the epilogue, which, of course, that's the big thing that everyone gives shit to in Harry Potter. Like, I think that's been the thing that's received the most widespread criticism from Harry Potter, has been the epilogue. And, like, it's like, what, the last series, or the last sentence of Harry Potter is something like, and all was well, or whatever. And it's like, oh, it ends happily, and everyone gets named after everyone else, and it all wraps up, and, like...
Everyone's married heterosexually.
Yes, boo.
And And then, I mean, even, you know, after Animorphs pretends to have ended, then it's like, no, it starts again. Like, they have to go find their friend.
That,
like, the fight has not ended. Like, it's probably never going to end.
Yeah.
Which
and
I think is,
yeah,
you know, it certainly is not going to end internally. Like, that much, you know, you learn by the end, by the time the series ends.
Yeah.
That it's always with them.
Yeah, they're like,
but
shattered.
But they're still fighting.
Yeah, like, the end of Harry Potter, everyone seems very whole. Everything, every circle is closed, every knot, like, you know, tied off. Like, everything is very whole. And at the end of Animorphs, everything is very broken. Like, at least it's from what I remember it. It's been a while since I've read the last book, and we'll get there in, like, 10 books. So maybe, like, 10 years at the rate we go. But, but yeah, there's no happy ending in Animorphs, and there's no, and the message is that war is hell, and J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter, war is, I guess, hell in the last book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of school before that.
Yeah. School can be hell, too. I don't know. I feel like the main divergence is the series' interest or lack of interest in its villains.
Mm.
And we've spent a lot of time, and we'll continue to spend a lot of time, talking about Yurks,
mm-hmm,
and how the series deals with Yurks and how it, you know, humanizes them, for lack of a better word, and you know... makes them more 3D than Mr. 3 would seem to be, you know, at the outset.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Potter is not particularly interested in its villains. Even the development it's given, like, for Tom Riddle is, like, it is a failure of empathy. Like, I don't recall ever feeling bad. I mean, of course, yeah, you feel bad for Tom Riddle as a kid when you see him,
yeah,
like, at the orphanage, I guess.
I think so.
His home that he grows up in. Because, like, you would feel bad for any kid who isn't a bad place. But, like, there is not enough to go on with Team Tom or with Voldemort. Snape is a total failure of a character.
Mm.
I think everybody agrees about that now.
Woo.
And, you know, the Death Eater is, like, you know, the barest outlines of Western history, like, they're not made for you to feel bad for you to empathize with, or, you know, to be anything other than, you know, fascist cannon fodder.
Mm.
And so, you know, it is kind of, and again, this is not something I was thinking about when we were kids, because it's like, it's a fantasy book, you have heroes and you have villains.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But, and, you know, to be fair, I also wasn't really thinking about that when I was reading Animorphs when I was a kid. Other than to be interested in, like, characters like Aftrin. Because they're there, and time,
mm-hmm,
is given to them, and so you get to be interested in them the way that you would be interested in any character that's developed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The thing,
yeah.
I haven't reread the books in a long time, but I ended up kind of rewatching all of the Harry Potter movies earlier this year. And I say rewatching, I mean that very loosely. I put them on because I had a really big project that I needed to do, and they're, like, so long, and I know them all really well, so it's, like, perfect background noise. But even, like, watching, like, I watched Chamber of Secrets for the first time in forever, and I was like, this movie is terrible and a failure of what that book actually was, which at the time I really loved and could maybe still defend now. Not gonna. But the thing that really annoyed me when I got to the first part of the seventh book, I guess, that scene at the beginning, like, basically, and this maybe is more of a movie thing than a book thing, but J.K. Rowling was heavily involved in the movies as well, but, like, the villains are, it's, like, such an aesthetic, and I know that's a thing, especially in sci-fi and fantasy, but, like, my god, all the Death Eaters are in that damn dungeon with those shiny black bricks and the black table and the black chairs. Everything has a gothic spookiness to it. Everyone's wearing black and has, like, long stringy hair and looks just kind of, like dark circled under the eyes. I'm like, my good lord, was there any creativity? The only thing that stands in opposition to that is Umbridge, and it's still a stylized twist on it.
Yeah, like, honestly, if you can eyeball a villain on the street, they're not doing a very good job, right?
No.
Like, you could never look at Dolores Umbridge and be like, she seems okay. Like, she's obviously not okay.
It's true. And, like, and it is, I don't know, maybe it's because they're meant for kids, but is that also just kind of, like, not giving kids enough credit for being able to put depth in to, like, visual character development? Because, like, that's the thing with Animorphs, is that you can't clock a villain, and that's the point. Like, you can't see who's a controller. They walk among you. They are your brother. They are your mom. They are your principal. Like, it's anybody. And so that is, there's, like, inherently, I think at the outset, just more weight given to any of the villains in Animorphs, regardless, like, before we even get into knowing some individually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, shit, I had a point.
Oh no, I'm so sorry. Something about the aesthetic.
I don't know what it was. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, there's not really an aesthetic for Animorphs, which is interesting because, of course, you know, the big news for Animorphs fans recently was that the movie is going to happen.
Will it be animated? Can I ask someone in power to make it animated?
The movie is in a series.
I don't know. We should have probably looked this up before we started.
Let me look it up real fast.
Because I do think in animation, I mean, I suspect we've talked about this at some point as we've rattled about these books for years, that an animation would serve it better,
yeah.
Because then you could get them to be age appropriate. Like, I don't want fucking Riverdale, like, 20-somethings to be, like, no, I want children, and I want, like, cool effects.
Yeah, because, like, remember when Hunger Games was coming out, and, of course, it, you know, cast some 20-somethings, I think they would have been at that time, and there was some post on Tumblr that was, like, oh my god, look at Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson when they were, like, actually 15. And, of course, they look like infants, because they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's the point. That's why you should have cast actual teenagers, because
yes.
It's monumentally more fucked up.
Yes, I do not want CW Animorphs.
Yeah, so, I mean, if Kay is happy with where the movie landed, then I trust them. But yes, that is the big news. And so, you know, because the series doesn't rely on appearances necessarily to telegraph intention or to tell you something about what the person is like or what the character, what purpose they serve, with the exception of Visitor 3, who relies only on appearances to make his point.
He's flashy.
I don't know what it will look like.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it will be very 90s.
I was about to say, it better be a period piece. It has to be.
You can't not. I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about the 90s elements of these books, all of which are sterling.
I want everyone in baggy clothes except Rachel, who would never.
If it doesn't open with an Nine Inch Nails track, then what are we even doing?
Yeah. Like, they couldn't have it now. There is no role. Yeah. Yeah, we clearly have opinions. Someone will be in touch with us post-haste to get our takes on what should happen.
Well, I mean, you have to figure that the filmmakers, whoever they are, if not our age, probably not that much older.
Yeah, fair. Hopefully no one I went to school with. That wouldn't feel good.
But then you could maybe call them up and be like, so, can I consult?
Exactly, just slide you a little 20. Be like, you remember all the good times we had?
Like, did you know that you have a noted Animorphs expert in your circle?
Never mind that I forget all of the contents of the books after I read them. It's fine. One other thing I was going to say about a Harry Potter versus Animorphs thing, and this is something I've said before about Harry Potter, even before everything went sideways, with J.K. Rowling opening her mouth and demonstrating herself to be a terrible person. The Harry Potter suffers, I think, from not expanding its point of view. And she doesn't, like, I guess it's intentional enough when, like, the first chapter of some of the books. It's like Frank the groundskeeper, the unbreakable vow or whatever, like, of like, there's those two jump out, and that's like, what, 4 and 5 or 4 and 6 maybe. But otherwise we are just in Harry's point of view, and that fool doesn't know anything. He's not a part of this world. And like, on the one hand, that's what makes it really engaging, is that he's learning about this like fresh without having to, like, I mean, it's basically like he's muggle born except he does have like a bloodline into the world, which is a little bit like, okay, whatever. Like, where are the Hermione like books? But anywho, that it would, like, Animorphs has the benefit of switching, like, she has 5, 6, how many are there? When you count X. 2, 3, 2, 6.
Yeah,
yeah, 6.
Boys, girls, X.
And that you can switch, and that they're all individual people, and so the interactions that they have with, like, villains or with allies, like, they're allowed to be, you know, nuanced, and we're allowed to see things from different perspectives, we get different takes, and then because the series continues, those takes all interact with one another, and, like, the world building beyond that, like, we get the Horcrux Chronicles, we get the Andalite Chronicles, like, we get interesting stuff beyond the original canon that isn't, like, magical beasts and where to find them, or that other one that was like an add-on that was part of the extended universe, where it's just like, well, this isn't enrichment.
Yeah. I'm not gonna pretend like I've ever had an original thought myself, but because Harry Potter is so thinly veiled, and as far as its villains go, like, you really can't have too many feelings about them other than what you would have about historical villains that they're based on.
Mm.
Right. Whereas the Uruks and Animorphs don't really have they don't map as easily onto like a known human conflict.
Mm.
Right? It's not the War of the Roses, it's not World War II, it's not one of the popular, you know, global things that we recognize.
It's not,
like,
Jesus.
Oh,
it's not King Arthur.
Right. And so much time is spent with them, like, on their homeworld, with their politics, their weird politics. And, you know, sure, maybe it's not sophisticated compared to, like, adult science fiction. But as far as, like, kid science fiction goes, it's still pretty ahead of the curve.
Mm. I think the only time we've drawn historical parallels in the Animorphs world to the, like, human world is when we compared the Andalites to Americans. We did do that. That's probably not what people would be talking about, though.
I mean, but I think that's a kind of a good point, because Americans don't like to think of themselves as villains.
No.
Andalites hate to think of themselves as villains.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what?
A lot of times we aren't the villains.
Yeah, or at least we fail to be the hero.
Oh, yes.
Which, I mean, a big part of Animorphs is the Andalites failing to be the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, yeah, you do realize that the heroes aren't coming.
Ugh. Yeah. How depressing. Yeah. Another thing that, like, I don't know, I'm just, like, spinning out any Harry Potter thought I've ever had in my life. And I think as well, like, we were talking about, it's like, there are certain characters that obviously, you know, your favorites are maybe characters that you relate to or you see yourself in. And like, when I was a teenager, like, reading Harry Potter, like, that character was Hermione, like, as any just, like, nerdy, slightly socially inept, like, girl, reading them, like, Hermione was my, like, person in the text. And it was also really sort of easy to see that Hermione was probably as close as a self-insert as, you know, an author would probably be willing to do. Or,
yeah, hasn't she said that?
Yeah, I think so. But the thing that struck me is that she's not particularly good to Hermione in the text. And it also bothered me when they first started doing the movies, Emma Watson would kind of shit on Hermione, because Emma Watson was like 11 or 10 even, I think, when they started. And like, Hermione's like bossy and like not a cool girl to be around. And Emma Watson was like being kind of a bratty little preteen and was like, no, I'm nothing like her. Like, she's kind of insufferable. And I had like 2 more years on her. But at the time I was like, how dare. Like, Hermione is the light and life of that entire book series.
Yeah, it is weird to, it's like, okay, even if that's how you feel, it's your job as an actor to embody the character, right?
Yeah. Well, she was 11. And she obviously sings a different tune now. And even by the end of the series, I think she had, like, was singing a different tune by, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or something. But even for, like, J.K. Rowling, and, like, of course, the obvious example that, like, people, you know, put forth about Hermione and, like, the issue of, like, slavery in the book is with the house elves, and that Hermione is laughed off the pages for trying to do something about the fact, and is coming in from the, like, non-magical world. Like, it's presented that, like, a muggle, like, someone who's coming from the muggle world is like, what the sweet hell is this? And everybody in the magical world is just like, it's just the way we do things. And as an adult, when you realize that, you're like, oh no. Like, and that really, when we talk about, like, that just comes into the core conflict of the fact that most kids reading these books were enamored with this magical world. And that it's presented as just, like, this is amazing. Like, you can just conjure, like, things and, you know, it's magic. There are no rules, except there are some rules. But that, like, the magical world is just like, oh, no, we just keep slaves and they like it. It's cool. And then as an adult, you're like, oh, no, it's all coming crashing down.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, obviously everything with JK that exploded recently was, like, you know, virulently awful and very overt, and, like, you could not ignore it, right? If you're even a slightly decent person, like, you would see this and be like, okay, well, we have dispensed with this person. We don't have to listen to her anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how many years ago now did Pottermore come out?
I don't know. I didn't participate.
Like, you know, her bullshit really ramped up around that time when she was, like, developing, like, the American magical schools.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
shut up, Joanne.
Here's why this is bad.
Yeah.
And so she just kept expanding and expanding and expanding. And, like, at that point, it's like, is it even your publisher asking you for this? Like, this is going to be a gold mine until the sun burns out. Like, you don't need to do anything else to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that you are doing is, like, actively making it worse and compelling people to look at this again with a more critical eye than their nostalgia would prefer.
Mm. Or not, which is also, which is a,
like,
problem.
You're killing the legacy. Like, it's gone.
Yeah.
And because, yeah, all of her world building is actually really bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, she's been on a merry-go-round of, like, stop talking, Joanne, stop talking, for years now, like, and it's just,
incredible.
Yeah, like, this is just the latest and the worst of it, and it's, because it's not even, you know, it's not even her, like, commenting on her own text or adding things, like, Dumbledore was gay, or, I don't know, like, whatever she's, I don't know, all the stuff that, like, it's just like, Joanne, go away.
And, like, I never got, I don't know, my position in the various things of, like, you know, in fandoms of things that I love, I've never been a particularly active fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't write a lot of fanfic. I never wrote fanfiction for Harry Potter. But I know a lot of people have, obviously, and have engaged with it really, you know, far more actively, and have very developed headcanons about different characters and how those characters reflect them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of, like, finding yourself in those books, if you are a trans person specifically, or a queer person, and knowing what the author thinks about you, yeah, that's heartbreaking.
That was the exact word that I was just going to say. That was, like, a punch to the gut.
The exact, like, it's so weird to have, like, I mean, it really is, like, a heel-face scenario in pro wrestling, where, like, that pairing is always, like, a direct mirror of the other, because the flip side, the exact flip side that happens in real time is queer Animorphs fans who have been talking about the series for years and writing their own, you know, fanfic and, you know, developing characters, specifically Tobias, I think, and Marco to some extent, and probably Axe, and their creator, you know, affirming them and talking with them about it and saying out loud, like, yes, these, you know, these interpretations are valid. Like,
mm-hmm.
the things that you're finding in the text are there
mm-hmm.
because they're what you have found. And having a trans daughter is just like this. I mean, everything in 2020 feels like it's been written by someone else
mm-hmm.
who's not us
mm-hmm.
to some extent, but this is a nice little microcosm of that, to where, like, you have these two titans of formative children's fiction, and one of them is just overtly villainous, and the other one is like, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm here to be the mirror of this and, like, turn that mirror to you.
Yeah. Well, that's anytime a creator is just basically like, these are yours. These characters are yours. Like, this world is yours. Like, this is your playground. I will not stand in the way of, like, I'm not gonna be so precious about, like, my, quote-unquote, like, kingdom that, you know, I'm gonna discourage interpretations that I don't agree with. Because, like, yeah, I don't know. You're done. You're done with it. Bye.
And I guess you could say that part of that probably comes from, I mean, obviously, K.A. Applegate's name is on the books, but not a zillion ghostwriters.
True.
And so, naturally, all of them put some stamp of themselves on the books. And so they are, you know, they are a little more of a Hydra head than, I mean, presumably J.K. didn't have any ghostwriters. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, also, I don't know. This is sort of speculation, me sort of wandering around in thoughts out loud, but I mean, K.A. Applegate has written other young adult series. I mean, I presume that she will be always most famous for Animorphs, but there are plenty of other people who have read her other stuff and not Animorphs. And we don't know, we don't have, like, a K.A. Applegate, like, origin story. Whereas, like, my God, we had to hear all the time about the cafe in Edinburgh with the napkins and the stroller, which, like, I don't want to make light of someone's genuine struggle. But that story was packaged up so much in the story of the rise of fame to Harry Potter, like how the riding a train and the boy appeared to her as she was sitting in the seat. And, like, again, I don't want to make, you know, light or folly of someone's actual experiences and or even someone's creative process. But J.K. Rowling came to us with such a, you know, such a, like, a mythos and, like, an origin story, and she's defined by this book series, you know, to the point where she writes as a pen name for adult fiction. And, like, on the one hand, like, that probably is challenging, but, you know, I think that probably affects the way that we perceive both authors and the relationship to the work that they've done. And maybe their relationship with the work that they've done. I don't know, that's the speculative part, but that you know, is to what level are these books, you know, their babies or, you know, part of their identity or, you know, how much are they stepping away from them?
It is interesting that when J.K. finished Harry Potter, like, she didn't, to my knowledge, write any more kids' books.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she just has her adult books, which, as you have said, are under a pen name. And Catherine Applegate, again, to my knowledge, has not written any adult books. Like, she stayed writing for kids. You know, she did a couple more series in the 90s, and then, you know, now she writes mostly longer juvenile novels, like standalones, some of which have won awards and are very well received, and, you know, she is, you know, a pillar if you're in kid lit. Like, her books get read in school, which I think is really neat. And, yeah, so it's like, okay, if you start out writing for kids, usually, you know, you choose that because I don't think anybody picks it because they think it's going to be easier than writing for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it absolutely is not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, at some point, okay, funny sidebar. I'm pretty sure Agatha Christie wrote for kids before she wrote mysteries.
Qua?
I think actually her sister, like, dared her to write a mystery. And Agatha Christie was like, fine, fucking will then. And then she did.
I had no idea.
Cut that part out. I'm pretty sure it's true, though.
Well, I'll leave it in. We'll get some fact checkers to descend on us if you have misspoken in any way.
The point is, I don't know, and this is, you know, it's total projection and probably useless speculation, but, like, you know, just based on their bodies of work, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that Catherine Applegate cares more about kids than J.K. Rowling does.
Well.
Like, you can't say the things that J.K. has said and claim to care about kids.
Yeah.
Specifically mom's kids, but all kids. You know?
Yeah. That lady. What a chief.
Yeah, it is disappointing when anybody turns out to suck really loudly in public.
Yes. Well, and she's loud. She has a large audience. People care what she says. Like, she means things to people. And I know that she's allowed to be a person, but, like, you're being a shitty person. Like, you, like, sit down and, like, stop advocating for your shitty opinions that are harmful to people, especially kids.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, obviously Americans in particular have a very bad relationship with celebrity.
Oh.
And we do things to celebrities that are unrealistic, and we expect things of them that are dehumanizing. But at the same time, like, if you are the most famous living children's author, like one of the all-timers, like, you get to watch what you say in public, and preferably also in private, but definitely in public.
Yeah.
It was like when Britney Spears tweeted the picture of her and her husband, I guess, boyfriend, friend, wearing their masks, and somebody was like, if no one else is around, you don't have to wear them. And she was like, gotta be a good example. I'm like, you're right, Britney. You do.
Is right.
You're a public icon. Lots of people will see this photo, and you have to be a good example.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of, which this is a can of worms to even bring up, but relevant. It reminds me a little bit of when Tina Fey, who is not good on so many things, particularly race, there was that one episode of 30 Rock that was like, I forget what the name of it was, but it was the, it had, is it Christina Milioti? Doing the, like, sexy baby voice, and it was like, oh, it was called TGS Hates Women. And so, of course, they were talking to Tina Fey about, like, feminism, and was it really a good example that she was setting in the episode, her defense was sort of that she was like, just because it's on, like, a sitcom or a television show, it doesn't mean that it's prescriptive. Like, I'm not, like, here to, like, dispense, like, morals. And it's sort of like, okay. And I think part of where things have gone wrong with 30 Rock, among, you know, others, is that, like, the interpretation that Liz is the moral center, and that Liz herself is not a terrible person, when in fact, like, and as the show goes on, it descends more into her being just as, like, batshit and flawed as the people around her. But it's just, fine, not every piece of art or work has to have, like, impart a great moral lesson, but you're putting a television show on NBC, which I know, you know, Joke would only have, like, 10 viewers or whatever, but, like, you, when you're publishing content on that level, like, the visibility of things matters, like, the visibility of what you say matters, and honestly, like, even if you don't have a TV show, even if you are just a person who interacts with the same 10 damn people every day, like, what you say matters, and what you do matters, like...
Yeah, I mean, we all learned our lesson from Atticus Finch, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be the same person in private as you are on the street.
And on television.
Well, I mean, as far as TV goes, it's like, sure, Matthew Weiner can think that he's making Mad Men for, like, the highest common denominator of viewer, but he's not. All TV is received by the lowest common denominator of viewer. People
yeah.
who either aren't paying attention or don't, or actively seek out the interpretation that they want and see that Don is the hero, that Walter White is the hero.
Yikes.
And so forth.
Ugh. Cool thoughts to have and get overwhelmed by.
And as far as, like, Tina Fey goes, her very bad week notwithstanding.
Stop talking, Tina, stop talking.
You'd think she would be savvy enough to know that we have not yet progressed past the point where a lot of people who, I guess, have a controlling interest in media are looking for women or people of color that they can hold up as an example of, well, it doesn't bother them, so it's okay. Spend your time punching up. Like, that's really the bottom line.
Yeah, Tina Fey is, like, my own personal, like, teenage reckoning of adulthood. It's just like, I loved you so much as a teenager, and we're just gonna have to tack on 12 asterisks and drop you down the list, like, significantly, because you're not doing great.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
This does seem to be, you know, it's the reckoning year, I think, for lots of people.
It does feel like, more politically speaking, but this is probably dramatic. It feels like the villain that we're facing is a very, like, well-selected villain for every problem we've ever had across the, like, history of our country. Like, it just seems, and I guess that probably goes into what you're saying, is that this year feels scripted. It's like, that's what it feels like. It feels like we're in the, like, season finale, and the writers are like, well, how do we do it bigger and better than we've ever done? Like, we'll just put every problem, every, like, bad, like, every, like, story arc that we've ever had, we're just gonna, like, embody in this one villain and, like, force our heroes to, like, have, like, a reckoning where they burn it all down. It's like, well, that's what it feels like. Just, like, the nexus of, like, toxic capitalism, racism, intolerance.
Shitty media men, again.
Yes, like... just every season arc villain that we've ever had in one big bad, like a Thanos of, I've never seen that movie, but I'll pretend like I can throw out that reference.
I actually haven't seen it either.
I don't know, he wears jewelry, I guess that's all I got.
I feel like there was definitely more than one Thanos movie.
I have no idea. I lost track of those movies so quickly. There are so many. I can't.
If nothing else, I guess at least we're in a post-Marvel age.
It does seem hard to go back to Marvel movies, like, or at least, like, we're in, I don't know, it's like, I'm very sorry that I'm about to say the phrase, like, third wave Marvel of, like, are we finally to the point where, like, Taika Waititi gets to do all of them, and we're gonna gender swap them all, and include more people of color, and queer people, and, like, are we at that point, is this where we're gonna, like, finally?
I guess that was the plan. But who knows if Hollywood will exist next year, so.
Oh boy, who knows what will exist next year? It doesn't even... 2021.
Thanos movie will get made. That's
yeah.
That's
what matters. That's right. That, it, like, you know what's really easier to make in a pandemic? Animation.
Yeah. And everybody can work remotely,
mm-hmm.
separately, their
mm-hmm.
own computers, doing their own drawings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some point in the early books, when they're talking about, like, their powers, I feel like Cassie says we'd be hot in horror movies. I want an Animorphs horror movie. Like, that's the genre that they should pick. 90s horror.
Oh my god. Can you,
like, Scream, but with morphing.
I I'm not even a connoisseur of horror movies, and this is a tantalizing idea that you presented just now. I feel just like Marco in a horror movie. Would he get killed first because of the wisecracking?
Yeah, let's talk about himbos.
We're bringing in...
You know, there was an enormous himbo discourse this week. It's wild to me that since the pandemic started, I've been trying to, like, have at least one day of the weekend where I, like, don't look at the internet at all.
That's so
just,
healthy.
Like, totally detox. And it is. It's great. But inevitably, I come back to find that something just inane has happened.
It's like, isn't there, like,
weekend?
A... is there something with Gandalf where he's like, something horrible has happened here? That's, like, what you, like, come back all, like, wizened and, like, feeling like you're a,
it
like, superior being.
Yeah, it's like the, again, the community thing that I haven't seen where Troy walks into
the fire.
Yes. Yeah, it's just like that. And this week, you know, it's just been scaling up in absurdity. And this weekend, yeah, it was himbos. I came back and everybody's talking about himbos. And I'm like, well, I mean, I'm happy because I love himbos, but, like, why? What was here?
It's like the, this is a terrible, the blast shadow or whatever. Like, you're, like, looking at, like, a fossil record trying to
find
it. It's like, what happened here?
Oh, my God. The point is, I think Jake is a himbo. Discuss.
I could get on board with that.
Marco is the more obvious choice. Because Marco is, like, the cute one, right?
Mm, yeah.
But he's also really smart.
He is.
Even if he pretends not to be.
Yeah, and we've kind of talked about how Jake is not good at school. Like, Jake's real average in, like,
yeah,
a good way.
And kind of big, and he has a good heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a girl. And those are sort of the, I mean, usually the himbo is, like, hunky, you know.
Mm.
Brendan Fraser comes up as, like, the gold standard of 90s himbos because he made, like, 5 movies in a row where he played that character.
Bless him.
And all of them are all gold. But I don't think necessarily that, like, super attractiveness is the hallmark. It really is about, like, where the person's heart is at and how they interact with women.
Hmm.
You ever see Jake negging Cassie? No.
No.
Whereas Marco
never.
Is, unfortunately, the way that he talks to girls when he does talk to girls. It's like, you have been watching whatever the 90s version of, like, the pickup artist is.
Oh, no.
Good that now you are only going to hang out with aliens.
Yeah.
Until you have better manners.
Yeah. That's why we need Rachel there to, like, knock him down a peg in this department,
exactly.
Particularly.
It's funny that Animorphs doesn't really have a Hermione character. They're all, I mean, Rachel, I think it's established that she gets good grades, but it's sort of just in line with, like, her perfect persona anyway. Like, she's really beautiful and stylish,
yeah,
and she, you know, has other friends presumably, and, like, does well in school. But once everything starts ramping up, it's not like she's, I never got the impression that she was, like, you know, she's not the bookish one, and
no.
Cassie is also not the bookish one.
Yeah, well, and that's something that I've, like, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to say the obvious, but, like, a lot of the go-to, like, quote-unquote strong female character is, like, smart. That is the thing that I think is the easiest label to put on a female character that is the quickest shortcut to, like, a three-dimensional character, or, like, a good character is, like, she's smart, and so she'll solve things. And I've had to, like, grow as someone who very much identified by being smart as a teenager and as an adult, and, like, trying to let go of that a little bit. I've had to, like, kind of start being like, no, I appreciate the female characters that are not smart. Like, when I watched Girl Meets World, like, Sabrina Carpenter's character, like, struggles in school. And I actually really appreciated that because you don't see that a whole lot. Like, I don't know if it's part of the, like, ingenue stereotype or archetype for women that helps them still be perfect and not have any flaws, but in a way that's more accessible for quote-unquote, like, real women to, like, engage with them. And it is kind of nice that there's not that in Animorphs.
Yeah, like, they both... I mean, you certainly wouldn't say that either of them is unintelligent.
Mm-mm.
But it's like they have their thing, and neither of their things is, like, hanging out in the library, which, I mean, that was all I did when I was a teenager. I did not have an identity outside of when I was reading,
yeah.
Which is fine, but
yeah.
It is sort of unusual to have two, you know, heroic girl characters, and neither of them is, like, the Willow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and also, like, there's never, I don't know, like, because Hermione, she doesn't have friends outside Ron and Harry.
Yeah, she doesn't really have another thing.
No.
Like, they both play Quidditch at some point and have, like, a team structure and, you know, kind of, like, hang out with, you know, the other team members. And, like, the two boys hang out with the rest of, like, the Gryffindor boys. But Hermione doesn't, you know, she's not like other girls.
Yeah.
And doesn't get along with other girls, which, that's
not. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's another example of just sort of, like, something that feels satisfying as a teenager that doesn't know better, but then as an adult, I'm sort of like, well, that's actually kind of poisonous, shallow, and lazy. And that's something that I do love about Cassie and Rachel, is that they are very much, that they are best friends. They are, like, the most important people to one another in that group, and, like, their arcs are fundamentally pulling them away from one another, even though they still love each other the same amount that they have loved each other the whole time. And any conflict that they have, obviously, other than, like, teasing about clothes, and because they are sort of portrayed as, like, opposites in that sense, you know, that Rachel's a fashion plate, Cassie has raccoon poop on overalls that are too short for her all the time. But that's really the only way in which they're portrayed as opposites. Their conflict comes from, like, a very, like, painful, deep-seated, genuine, human place, not, like, you know, boys or popularity or social problems or, you know, any of the typical teen girl stuff that you often see. Or that people, like, rely on or resort to without thinking about why. Yeah.
Like, where could conflict possibly come from if two girls aren't fighting over a boy or whatever? I mean, to some point, Cave got ahead of that by making Jake and Rachel related, but even still, like, they're not fighting over Marco.
That's true. Yeah, she really, like, laid that out neatly in the, on the front end.
She's like, here's what we're not going to do.
Yeah.
There will be no love triangles.
Oh, my God.
With war as the third corner of the triangle.
Yeah, exactly. Is Victor Crumb the himbo of Harry Potter?
Probably. I guess you would say Harry's kind of a himbo, but I don't think he's nice enough, really, actually.
Yeah, he is a little bit of a shit in a good way. In ways that don't get highlighted very often, but every so often I see that, like, photos that are gifts that go around on Tumblr that's Harry being a little bit of a shit to various authority figures.
Yeah, but Victor Crumb is kind of a standout, because, like, I mean, I actually don't think, I mean, he's not, certainly not described as being, like, conventionally attractive, but, like, he's a, you know, an uber jock and successful and famous, and thinks that Hermione's book smartness is, like, really attractive, which is, as was discussed on Twitter, one of, you know, one of the big appeals of the himbo is not that he's not smart, and that somehow puts you in a position of power, but that he thinks you're impressive.
Well framed. Well, because, like, for every woman in a heterosexual relationship, is that not the dream?
A dude who won't argue with you and get you to try to prove that you're smart, but not too smart, and is just, like, thinks that you're, like, cool and impressive.
Oh, God, I'm getting, like, hives as you're saying that.
That's why I thought it was so, I mean, obviously the original tweet, I think, has been deleted. I think that the person who tweeted it was like, all right, I've accepted your criticism, and I'm thinking about this. I'm going to choose my words more wisely next time, because, but I really do think that, you know, the point was missed. Like, the point is not that whoever is attracted to this type of man, like, in the context of media, because, like, in real life, nobody is going around, like, talking about this.
Yeah.
Or putting it on their, like, Tinder profile or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to seek out somebody who with a non-matching intellect so that I can prey on them and exploit them in some way. Like, it's
that's a thing.
I'm tired of talking. I'm tired of having my time taken up by men who are not interested in my perspective.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, because when you say it like that, like, and again, hashtag not all men, but that the thing that first jumps to mind is that I've garnered that many men subconsciously, if not consciously, design relationships to be like that. Like,
yeah,
that's a thing. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah. And like projecting that, I think, onto.
Unsuspecting,
yeah. Like
smart
the power
women.
Differential is not necessarily one that can be transferred.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see the development of the internet's boyfriend. Let's say,
oh,
I feel like the last time that we had a big like internet boyfriend discourse, it was probably around the time of the election, and I'm pretty sure that coincided with like Oscar Isaac hype of popularity.
Mm.
And what Oscar Isaac is like the enlightened masculine, right?
Mm, yes.
And he's still like, you know, very masculine, very traditionally good looking, you know. But he's smart and sensitive and has a sense of humor and he can play the banjo or whatever he plays and sing and so forth. And so he's like, you know, this Renaissance man. And now it's like, we're tired. Can he just be nice? Like, can he just, like, be, like, sweet to us?
Is the bar,
is
the bar's, the bar's low again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, okay, I don't, you know, we've moved past the point of needing proof that, like, that heterosexual men can be...
Can contain multitudes.
Can contain multitudes, I suppose. Can be of, like, on par intelligence, at least. I think because, it was so searingly awful to watch someone as unintellectual as Donald Trump win the presidency. Like, it is an affront if you are an intellectual person, right?
Mm.
And now it's like, I'm just tired. We've had 4 years of this stupid bullshit, and I no longer need men to prove anything other than they can shut up and look pretty.
And, like,
and just
be respectful.
You know, yeah, nice. Like,
just be nice.
Everybody loves war for a reason.
Yeah, and you know, like, that's, you know, be nice is such a good, solid, like, never expiring standard to have for anything. Like, I'm on board with this.
Yeah, I think Smith's underrated, and that American men are taught, you know, to fear being called kind or being called sweet. Like, it is unmasculine, or, like, that's opposed in some way.
Mm.
And, like, yeah, it's no longer cute if you're not in college. Like, I don't want to argue about philosophy with you.
No.
Ever.
It's exhausting. I don't want to argue with my partner. And definitely don't want to argue with a man. Like, I really don't. It's just, it feels like a waste of my time.
We argued about this for, like, 5 days this week. It was kind of a nice break.
About himbos?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody knows one, right? At least one. Do you only hang out with smart people? Or do you just not hang out with men anymore?
A little bit of both. Like, I don't hang out with anyone.
Somebody on Twitter, at some point it devolved into, like, himbo typology, right? Because, like, okay, sure, Brendan Fraser in George of the Jungle,
mm.
Brendan Fraser in Airheads, Brendan Fraser in The Mummy, Brendan
mm.
Fraser in, like, literally everything in the 90s is kind of, like, what people think of.
Mm.
But, you know, IQ isn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't disqualify you if you are, like,
mm.
intelligent. I don't think. And I think that a good example of that, and this is probably where you could make it an argument for Marco, is like the version of John Glenn in Hidden Figures. Astronauts in general, I think there's a strong case to be made, you know?
Yeah, it's like they're the firefighters of the sky. Like,
exactly. Like, you have to be, like, legitimately very smart to be an astronaut, but if you think about it, all they do in their off time, the ones in Florida at least, is go to the beach.
Yeah. And
especially
also, like,
at that time when the space program was booming, like, they were all bros. But he also backs up all the ladies and is,
true.
Like, super on board for them. I love the Jonglin and Hidden Figures.
I know. And he's sort of like...
he's really cute.
Yeah. Sort of an ideal. Like a mashup of, like, the perfect... He's the Frankenstein. Somebody made him of all the parts of other, like, men.
Yeah. I mean, that. I think that is, you know... Within the context of superheroes, there's always some dude who wants to argue about, like, oh, but, like, Batman and, you know, Wolverine and so forth, and, like, isn't that all, like, unrealistic expectations, or it's, like, objectifying in the same way that, you know, female superheroes are the way that they're drawn versus the way that men are drawn. I'm like, okay, but you're missing the point. The point is, if you were going to design, like, the ultimate female fantasy, it probably is going to be John Glenn from Hidden Figures. Like, which is not the same, it's not what men are looking at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just, like, be nice and be supportive.
When presented with a brilliant female mathematician, ask her to send you into space. Like, obviously. Why would you ever ask for anything else?
Yeah, that's the next logical step.
Know who he wanted behind him.
Yeah, not, like, challenging or, like, yeah.
Maybe we should put it to a poll. Is Jake or Marco... Axe is kind of a himbo. Elfanger, my original point, I think, to you specifically, was that Elfanger was the ultimate himbo in the Animorphs universe. Because, like, but Axe kind of has it, too, because he's always like, oh, I didn't pay attention in school that day. I'm like, did you ever pay attention in school, Axe? Ever?
If you weren't on a planet of a technologically inferior species right now, you wouldn't, like, look so smart, would you?
It's true. He's like, you know, he is the smart one by default.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when he becomes a human, he's both unusually beautiful and also totally unhinged.
Yeah.
So.
And loves television and doesn't go to school or do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Probably the only one that you can't make a case for is Tobias.
Yeah, you can't make
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, Tobias.
Now.
You're way too interior and
yeah,
borderline intellectual, like... If you hadn't become a hawk, you probably would have started writing poetry.
Yeah. He was, I mean, he was, like, Sean Hunter adjacent. And, like, the himbo of Boy Meets World is Eric.
Yes, exactly. Or, also, what's the...
Oh, Jack? Matthew Lawrence?
Yeah. Eric is a little bit too, say he's too smart, but I don't know if that's the right word.
I don't think it is.
He's just a little too idiosyncratic, maybe.
That's fair.
He's definitely close, but I think Jack is a little more classically him, though.
Yeah.
Corey's the every boy. Sean is the troubled one. Yeah.
Can you make a himbo a main character? Because the thing about Jack versus Eric is Eric was on the show a lot longer and had to have storylines that brought more nuance, like, that inherently just brought more nuance to the character because of the time spent. Whereas Jack was a supporting character, he was on fewer seasons, and so therefore there's a little bit more of limitation on expansion out of himbodom. So I'm curious now, like, can you make a himbo a main character and make the story, or is that, like, part of what makes the himbo so attractive to women is a decentralizing of the, like, male perspective at the, like, as, like, the primary perspective?
I think some of the best examples, because, like, I mean, okay, George of the Jungle is called after George of the Jungle, the Brendan Fraser character.
Mm.
And he's more like the MacGuffin, you know.
Mm.
The main character is, what is her name?
Jane.
Well, you know who I mean.
Leslie Mann.
Everyone knows who I mean.
Yeah.
I think usually it is best if he's either, like, the MacGuffin type plot function, or the love interest, or
Manic
part of
Pixie Dream Boy. Like, if Jack from Titanic played sports.
Jack and Titanic played sports?
I don't know. When you say, because like my whole thing, because having rewatched Titanic recently on CBS's Sunday Night Movies that are now back, and by recently, I mean like 2 months ago, because time means nothing. But like it reminded me of my very like staunch belief that I established for myself like years ago, which is that like he is not the main character of that movie, and he is very much an accessory, and he is only there to serve like Rose's storyline, and like he is there to like exactly, and he like, and it's not like he, because he like quote unquote teaches her like how to become the person that she wants to become, kind of thing, but like he doesn't do it in like a patronizing way or like
yeah, it's not prescriptive. It's not like, I'm going to make you into, like, a cool girl or, like, my dream girl.
No, it's like, I can't save you, only you can do that. Like, that's a thing he says. Like, so it comes from, like, an empowering or supportive place. He's just a little scrawny.
Interesting. I've never really, I mean, I've seen Titanic a jillion times, but I've never really thought about what character type Jack is.
He's a manic trip pixie dream boy of the 19-teens.
That's probably the best description.
He
yeah.
appears like he doesn't have any, like he has sort of like vaguely described like magical past that always like aligns with something in the present to like help him survive or whatever. But like he just like magically appears and then magically disappears. And she even says like she doesn't even have a picture of him. Like she doesn't, like it's as if he's just, like, a specter, like, that comes to her. And then, like,
he's the Green Fairy.
He is. Oh, man. Another movie of my teenage years.
Will Ferrer is definitely a himbo.
God bless. Yes.
And maybe just in general.
I was about to say, I was like, maybe just
in life.
As somebody who insists on, like, being naked in movies so that women, like, can have the score evened a little bit, I feel like that automatically makes him a himbo, and that, and there's little arguing beyond that, like...
Yes.
He's just like a Highland himbo.
Honestly, like, I thought that this was a good discourse as far as internet discourse goes.
Mm.
And maybe that's just because I run with a largely pro-himbo crowd, and so I only see good opinions. But also, like, I think that, I mean, in my opinion, the actual opposite has not ever been bimbo, even though that's where the word comes from.
Mm. It's just like
and
the wordplay.
Thankfully... This time, we developed, like, yes, that is true. Like, there are lady himbos. They're not bimbos. They're lady himbos. Which, herbos, I think, I saw tossed around.
Herbos, okay. All right.
And it's like, you know, like Catra from She-Ra.
Okay.
In characters like that.
Okay.
You know, like sword ladies, usually, who just want to flex for the girls.
All right.
Which... Yeah, so that's not Dolly Parton, who is possibly the most beloved bimbo who has ever lived.
You cherish and love Dolly.
And who is unironically loved.
Yes.
I think part of it is, like, people are like, oh, well, himbo's offensive because it comes from bimbo, and that's offensive. And, like, it might have started out that way, but I think we've reached a point where people really like bimbos.
Mm.
Like, genuinely.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Dolly Parton, and she's demonstrably done a lot of good for the world.
Well, I feel like what, it's sort of like the reclaiming of, like, Dolly Parton has always been unapologetic about who she is, and that label that other people might try to make a negative thing about women, because there are always people that are trying to make things negative about women, especially related to, like, sexuality, or, like, promiscuity, or, like exaggerated, like, looks, or, like, breast size, or whatever, makeup, like, big hair, who knows, but that, like, Part of Dolly's appeal is that she's, like, never apologized for it, and that she's, like, embraced it.
Unapologetic is the core of, like, both of those archetypes.
Mm.
You know, people who are like, well, this is what I'm working with, and I'm not sorry about it.
That's such a better word than, like, I don't, because I feel like most of the time it's like, oh, confident. Like, you should be confident. It's like, eh. People misinterpret that to think that that should be something... Like, I don't know, people that are trying to be confident end up being not themselves, basically.
Yeah, cocky or arrogant.
Like a pickup artist, like Marco's pickup lines.
God. He's too young to be trying to pick up girls anyway.
Truly, you are in a world war, dude. You are the literal hope of the planet. You can date later. I'm sorry. Like, it is probably annoying to be, like, in a group where everyone's paired off. Like, honestly, like, I don't know. Is it possible for any sort of teen... And I don't really mind it in Animorphs, and romance is not really the reason that I've ever read the series, but, like, just the concept of the one big happy Weasley family always bothered me in Harry Potter. I just want a teen series where, like, they don't all, like, get paired off in the end. Like, it's like...
Although, if Animorphs is a case of teen pairing off, then it is canon that Marco and Axe are dating.
That's fair. We'll come back to this again and again.
I mean, they're the only two that are left. By process of elimination, they have to be dating.
Exactly. That's why they couldn't keep not Eric. That's why they couldn't keep David. It's an odd number. Get out of here, dude. We can't pair off now.
It is interesting that, like, yeah, like, he doesn't ever... I mean, even when the series expands and, like, there are more Animorphs, like, we're about to experience, he doesn't get a love interest at any point. I don't know what's behind that. I don't know if anybody's ever asked J.K. or not J.K. Haha, the good one. Anyone's ever asked K.A. specifically what is behind that or if she thought about it at all.
Yeah. Well, it's honestly, like, I don't know, like, I feel like it would feel weird if she introduced a love interest. Like, the book series are so much about those six, like, kids. The familiarity of the love interest of the other two sort of, like, makes it seem like they're not actually love interests because they are real characters. Like, it's people we spend time with. Like,
everybody has something else going on. None of it is actually, like, romance arc.
Yeah.
Necessarily. And even the tragic aspects of it, like Rachel dying and, you know, Jake and Cassie obviously aren't, like, endgame in the WB sense. Wow, WB, I am old. In the CW sense, kids.
Yeah, they're different. When you say the WB, and it hits different, as the kids
totally
say.
Totally different vibe.
Well, I was sitting here thinking about every love interest that was ever introduced on Buffy and how, not anything. Like, the love interests, like, some of the most hated characters for, like, no reason in, like, popular fandom are, like, love interests that were not what people wanted. And I think it's because you have to do more legwork to introduce a love interest that's not already on screen. Like, that is probably the easiest, like, why people get paired off is that it's, like, here is your cast of characters, just draw lines between them, and we will not bring in anybody new, because it's more work to, like, to catch them up and, you know, likability. It's doable, though. There's gotta be examples.
I can't even imagine Animorphs having, like, shipping wars the way that Harry Potter did. I mean, for one thing, I have never been much of a shipper of any characters. And maybe that's because I don't often have strong feelings about relationships, like, beyond what the creator has presented me with. It's like, okay, that seems right.
I was a part of Glee fandom. Nothing seemed right.
Okay, true.
That's, like, my, like, origin story. But even before that, I don't know. I definitely was sort of involved in shipping on Harry Potter. I was not involved in any shipping wars. But honestly, the first time that, like, Stop Talking Joanne was ever relevant in my life is when she called Harry and Hermione shippers delusional. I was like, why would you say that? Why?
I do remember that.
It was...
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, creators shouldn't acknowledge that they have ever heard of the concept of shipping.
That's fair.
Nothing good has ever come of it.
It really hasn't.
So, it would be best for everybody, I think, if showrunners and writers would just be like, fans? I'm unfamiliar with the concept.
I don't know her.
Who experienced this thing that I make? That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
And you know, in hindsight, it's weird to me that in the formative internet days, actually this was a question on Twitter this week also, which was like, what was your first posting community online?
Delightful.
And so like, my impulse was like, oh, it was Star Wars. That wasn't true. But that was probably, like, the one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, like, the one that I was part of the longest, and Star Wars is the thing that is, like, integral to my personality. And I don't know, in hindsight, if there was an Animorphs community, and we just never found it. Or if, like, maybe by the time we were, like, super online, we were a little, like, the series was ending.
I think so.
So, I don't know if prior to that, if, like, there was, like, a blog ring, or if people were doing, like, super vintage style, like, Usenet, X-Files, fanfic swaps, or...
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there are plenty of people who have been talking about this series for years, and there is fan fiction for it, and there's fan art, and all the things that you would associate with, and so maybe there have been fandom wars, and I just didn't know about it.
Maybe, yeah, if anybody listening is like,
imagine.
Is like 3 or 4 years older than us, and just and hit the internet and Animorphs right at the right time, let us know. Teach us our fandom history.
Yeah, I don't, it's weird, like, I don't know much about fandom history for this thing that has been really important to me, like, and remains important. I mean, I could run down the really weird highlights of Harry Potter fan history, like, right now, even if I wasn't involved in any of them,
but,
like...
but yes, agreed.
But if there was some, you know, if there were ever, like, weird personality cults in Animorphs fandom, it didn't make it onto the larger internet. There weren't any, like, you know, rippling fallout from that.
Mm-mm.
And in general, it just seems like it must be a somewhat more expansive place.
Yeah.
In time.
Yeah. Have we touched on everything and then some?
Probably.
We will come back with Animorphs, probably in the near future. We can be people who do things.
Yeah.
And also, time means nothing, so who knows if it could be...
I would love to add another thing to my avoidance slate. Reading things that are lightweight and podcasting about them is definitely...
Yes.
Fits that bill.
I don't remember what book we're up to. It's Axe Morphing the Fighter Pilot, I think?
Yep.
So, that's a thing we'll read. And we'll start the final countdown, really. The world is opening up, so it's exciting times. And it's exciting times to be an Animorphs fan. We are going to accept new fans in droves.
I mean, it says it on the books. Join us.
Exactly. I was thinking about, like, what are some, like, crumbs to leave out for, like, Harry Potter fans who are seeking, like, a new fandom. And I was just like, well, is, like, preferred battle morphs similar as, like, to, like, Harry Potter houses? Is that a thing that we can just be like, what would your battle morph be? Like,
it's more like a Patronus.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, I mean, I remember... God, the internet is truly fucking stupid a lot of the time. Maybe even most of the time.
Forever,
you know, there
was course.
For a while of people saying, like, oh, such and such is my spirit animal. And then finally somebody was like, you need to fucking stop it.
Yeah.
Like, why? Say something else. And so people who like that kind of thing were like, oh, well, just say Patronus. It's like, it's the same thing.
Oh, no!
Well, not even Patronus anymore. Patronus also sucked. And so people were like, well, you could say demon, like, from his Dark Materials. And I'm like, well, guess what? Philip Pullman, also a transphobe. Go figure. What is going on in Britain with fantasy writers? I don't know. And that one honestly stung a lot more for me personally, because for whatever reason, maybe because I read them when I was older, like, and a little more contemplative and was, like, going through some things, but, like, his Dark Materials is more important to me than Harry Potter is. So, finding that out about him was like, cool, you just had to suck too, didn't you? So, yeah, I guess now it's going to be your battle morph.
There's such a
cool anyway.
There's such a sense of, like, empowerment to that. Like, I really enjoy, like...
What is my battle morph? I don't know. It's probably still a house cat. Like, what are you going to do?
Well.
As we have seen, house cats can really rip you up.
That's, Well, earlier when I was talking about Hermione, I was like, my brain cycled through all of those words, and I was like, I don't know what to call her now. And then I literally just called her my person. That was, like, the word that came out. If you go back and listen to this very podcast, the word that came out of my mouth was, like, she was just my long silence person. Which, honestly, like, really, it's projection. Like, that is what, like, Hermione is my projection. But, like, never have I felt so vindicated as when her Patronus turned out to be an otter. It was, like, my favorite animal. Like,
I don't remember if it was ever established why that was her Patronus.
No, because,
like, everything else those Patroni was, like, something really emotionally significant, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a big deal that Tonks's had changed shape to reflect Lupin, I guess, in my recollection.
Yeah.
Or, like, Snape's, which is whatever Lily's had been. I don't remember what it is now.
A fawn, a
but
doe,
like,
or something.
What was Hermione and the otter about?
J.K. Rowling doing one thing for my pure teen heart and then nothing else ever again. yeah, I don't know. It, well, that's like, I don't know. It's just another way she kind of did Hermione dirty. I know a lot of people complain that she did Ron dirty. I don't care about Ron. I'm so sorry. People of the world who care about Ron, I don't.
I remember caring about Ron when I was reading the books. Like, I related to him in some ways in my recollection, but certainly don't care about him now.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
I have no... There's, yeah, I don't know. I've never had any desire to, like, revisit them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reread a lot of my childhood favorites and like, the comfort read sense, and also because some of them are legitimately good. I don't know, that one just didn't stick. It was, like, a very specific time period, a long time period, but a very specific one, and then it ended.
Yeah. I will say, I think I listened to the seventh book on audio CD, maybe, like, 5 or 6 years ago, and I feel like one thing that I did realize from an adult perspective, because, of course, yeah, like, your perspective changes on this, like, with rereading or re-listening to Harry Potter, the one thing that did strike me about Ron is I was like, his family is awful to him. But it's portrayed as he's so lucky to have a family. But I'm just like, his family is pretty terrible to him.
I hate that in media. Like, you know this. I hate any story that has to wrap up with, like, you know, family is family, and, like, blood is strong, and, like, you know, you forgive things from people because you're related to them, and, like, that's more important, and you can't ever sever ties. You must always, like, repair them.
Mm.
That's actually not true.
Yeah, you must be straight.
Plus, yeah, it's just gross. I never really thought about it like that, but that is the Weasleys. It's, like, Harry, like, covets that.
Yeah.
Even though they are awful to, like, one of their own actual family members.
They're pretty jerky to Ron. Like, Fred and George torture him, which is meant to be, you know, kind of, like, funny. But, like, and it, the thing about Ron is that he's, like, the forgettable Weasley or the, like, unremarkable child. Which, like, I mean, when you start putting it in those terms, like, that's, like, heartbreaking. But I don't, it comes through in the text in a weird way that I didn't, that the way that it came through didn't, like, you know, ping me as a kid. Like, that wasn't something that I saw and related to or felt empathy towards necessarily, which makes me sound like an asshole. But as an adult, being able to, like, look at that and be like, this is, like, a kid whose family, like, doesn't really show him, like, love in any sort of, like, meaningful or, like, action or, like, I don't know.
And they aren't the ones who change. Like, he undergoes sort of a, as I recall, it's been a while, like a forced change where, like, it's like his image gets rehabbed because he gets onto the Quidditch team and, like, has the shine of, like, playing sports or whatever. And, like, okay, we already have plenty of sports players, like, and why couldn't, like, everyone else just have started acting, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that bothered me, too, is that, like, as a fan of Hermione and of Harry to a certain degree, like, Hermione and Harry are exceptional and Ron is portrayed as not exceptional, and then, like, he is portrayed as, like, struggling with that he is in the shadow of the boy who lived, and, like, he can never live up to Harry, and that Hermione is sort of mobilized as, like, a pawn in that a little bit, that, like, like in its most simplistic, you know, no one changes to treat him differently. He just realizes like, oh, Hermione chose me. And that's like
yeah.
enough. And
like he attains like these standard cachet markers of like, he gets a girlfriend and he plays a sport. And like, okay.
Yeah.
So like, but who is he?
And I guess he saves Harry from the icy pond after he leaves in the book, like, and I don't know, Dumbledore gave him that Deluminator and he heard no way, I don't know, it's stuff that I just like, there are ways to write the unempowered character, like whether that's you know, literally in a magical sense, like, you know, like the people in like the non-benders in Avatar, or like you know, people that don't have the magical, whatever literal magical power is in the text that some people have and some don't, but then also like there are ways to write the ordinary people. And like, I never really liked the way that Ron was written, which is why I always say that Sokka from Avatar is the Ron Weasley of my heart. Cause I think that one was done well.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a lot here.
A formless mass of feelings about various properties.
This is a glimpse of what the podcast will look like when we're finished rereading the Animorphs books. So it's good to ease into this.
Excellent.
Yeah, but thank you for joining us. If you have stuck with us until the end of this podcast, we appreciate you immensely. If you have any thoughts, please feel free to share them with us. Whether they be about himbos or, you know, death of the author, it ranges a whole, we're happy to talk about a whole spectrum of things.
Roland Barth, himbo.
Okay. It just sounds like you're reading, like a graduation, like a commencement ceremony, like someone's name and like major, like degree.
Well, as we have seen this week, many people have degrees in himbo studies.
Suddenly everyone is a himbo expert. I'm going to figure out if I know one. I'll report back. Anywho. Thank you for joining us for this many-faceted discussion. We will come back with Animorphs post-haste, the second time in this conversation that I think I've used that phrase.
It's a good phrase.
It is a good phrase. Until then, I hope everyone is staying healthy, safe, many, many happy tidings to you as we're all going through some shit right now.
So much shit.